This issue that Representative Springer has raised is one that I think I can address. Under the existing law, if the Department of General Services provides coverage as required under the Tort Claims Act, we are also required to pay the legal expenses connected with that case.
Yeah, already in law.
That's right. It's already in law. As a matter of fact, it's in this bill. I can refer. It's on page 7. Line 38 to 41. When we are assigned a case under the Tort Claims Act, the Attorney General provides the legal defense for handling that litigation. The wording in those last four lines requires the department to pay the Attorney General for their expenses and any expenses outside consul they secure in defense of that case. The custom that we have been following, if General Services provides coverage, we will also provide coverage for the defense costs or any other costs connected with the coverage we're providing. The issue of the Penk case is the issue of whether the Tort Claims Act in itself, under Chapter 30, defines Title VII or implies Title VII coverage. It's specific right now in stating that a tort is a violation of 42-1983, which is federal statute. But it's not specific in that it covers a Title VII action. That is the issue. There is a request in for an Attorney General's opinion on this issue, and certainly if it's in the affirmative, we would be called upon under this authority I cited in Chapter 278 to pay those costs. So,
okay. Now, you're on, let me get this clear here. Page 7, and that is Section 16. On line 41, they and maybe you said it and I missed it, Gene. Why did they take liability out and just put insurance funds? Is that a broader coverage?
That's a technical adjustment because we're consolidating the liability and the restoration fund into one insurance fund.
Okay, so you're broadening the term then?
No, we're just placing the fund that pays the money in it. It's a
I realize that, yeah. But that actually does broaden the scope of this thing.
Yes, I would.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dunn.
As I understand the intent of the amendment, it would be to make it clear that the insurance coverage also includes the payment of attorney's fees and costs under that insurance coverage, as opposed to any legal costs of a state agency.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, we saw this language for the first time last evening, and we have questions about the scope that's intended by that amendment.
Yeah.
It could be interpreted to mean that we would have to pay all legal costs borne by an agency or assessed, and I have no problem with the concept that we are required to pay legal expenses connected with the coverages we provide.
Yeah.
And if that wording could be folded in, then I
don't. Mr. Chairman, that's the concern I have. As I read the language, it's not clear to me the breadth of coverage, and I certainly would favor language that would make it clear where there's insurance coverage and legal fees are a part of that coverage or should be, that be paid as a part of the insurance coverage. But I would hope we would modify the language to make it clear that we weren't going beyond that, if that's your intent.
Yeah, that's no problem. I asked Ms. Vifade to draw this language with that intent in mind, that when GSA is presented with their tendered defense of a claim and they accept responsibility, then that means that they're responsible for the legal costs that may be charged to them when the Attorney General represents them. That's the intent, Representative Bond, and anything that will make that more clear, I'm more than happy with.
So you're agreeing with Representative Bond that that you want a very clear definition of the proposed amendments on line 12 of page 1. I'm just getting this.
It's 13, but yeah, that's
13, I'm sorry.
Whatever language is necessary to make that clear, that's fine by me.
Okay. Representative Millis.
Let me ask it from the other angle. We're not seeking to enhance the ability of, let's say, the prevailing parties to, if it's not the Attorney General's office or someone, to collect attorney's fees through this language.
No, doesn't speak to that issue at all. Let me just...
It's not intended to. I think it could.
No, it's not intended to. Let me, maybe I should share with members of the committee a letter I've just received from the Judicial Department, which describes two other cases in which this is a problem for them. And they've sent a copy to Ms. Houston, I think, and to Mr. Frohmeyer. And members may want to take a moment to read that. But it points out a couple cases that are now, have recently caused litigation involving the Judicial Department. One of those was originally titled Fitch v. Belshaw, and it was later renamed Fitch v. Linden, in which plaintiffs had brought an action for declaratory and injunctive relief under 42 U.S. Code 1983. Plaintiffs sought and were granted a summary judgment that Oregon Indigent Defense Recoupment Statute was unconstitutional, and Judge Panner agreed with the plaintiffs there. The difficulties, as Mr. Linden has pointed out, is that involved litigation cost allocations and discussion about offering settlement for payment of, in this particular instance, the plaintiff's attorney fees. And apparently there was a disagreement between the Attorney General's office and risk management involving how that should be handled, and they felt that the Judicial Department should bear the cost of the attorney's fee. And this is maybe responsive to your particular question, Representative Miller. Apparently, what happened was that on an ad hoc basis, the Judicial Department settled and paid a portion of those fees, which they felt was inappropriate in those circumstances. And or they're suggesting that to the extent that the policy is silent or the statutes don't speak to that issue, it's something that we should consider. And then on page 2 of the Department of Justice, or pardon me, the Judicial Department's letter, they cite another lawsuit that's just been filed, and there again is a question as to who's going to be responsible for attorney's fees in this matter. And it's not just a cost of defense issue, but as you point out, Representative Miller, it may involve plaintiff's fees in particular kinds of actions as well. And they just, in conclusion, Mr. Linden has said that we just probably need to consider what the policy issues are and make a clear statement at some point what our policy is going to be. Who's going to pay the cost? Is it going to be the agency? Is it going to be the fund that's responsible for that? And I think we've got a rock there in the middle of the road, and we've got to get around it somehow. And I'm suggesting one option that would try to let agencies and GSA and everybody know exactly where they're at.
Representative Miller.
I fail to understand this, and it just says right here that the general services cost for services of defense and counsel and attorney generals required under these statutes, and such costs and costs incurred by the Department of General Services in administration of these statutes shall be paid out of the insurance fund. Now, doesn't that answer the question, or doesn't it? I don't understand.
Well, if you're the Department of Higher Education that's got a $2 million legal fee, then
they've got their own defense fund, haven't they? Aren't they carrying their own insurance right now?
That's what GSA is.
That's what we're talking about. Jing?
Mr. Chairman, I might comment on this. Existing law and the Tort Claims Act is very specific, and the liability fund coverage trails that specificity in that statute. What this bill will do will give the department the ability to insure other risks other than those specifically in the Tort Claims Act. So in that sense, we'll be able to ensure the type of Title VII cases that we're not able to now because of specifics in the statute. Our purpose would be to tell agencies through rulemaking and policy what coverages they have and charge an appropriate premium for those coverages. And that has been a problem now because of the interpretation we placed on the strict language in Chapter 30. With this bill, we will no longer have that problem, and we will be able to adopt rules and policies that make premium charges and coverage consistent, and everyone knows what we have.
Then you're agreeing with Representative Spann.
I'm agreeing with him under the existing statutes that there is that question, ambiguity. But we will, under this bill, if it passes, without that specific amendment that he's proposing, be able to offer the coverage that we could in the past for the Title VII cases and paying.
Then what you're saying is without that amendment.
Hold on. Are you saying then that the amendment on line 13, page 1, you disagree that it's necessary? I think what he just wants is declaratory language in this bill so there's no guesswork.
That's correct. And the concern that we have with the language is how broad is it? And I feel that with the existing language in Chapter 30 that requires us to pay the Attorney General's under Chapter, that, plus the practice that we have of paying defense costs as coverage goes along, I think gives us the tools to provide that coverage and do it in a business-like fashion and charging premiums for it.
Mr. Chairman.
We would intend to do that.
I want to make certain, because we were addressing Representative Springer, if you want to respond that before I call on the representative over here.
Okay, just a couple points. This AG's opinion that's now pending may come back and say you've got to pay the cost of the Penk case. Is that what you're saying?
That is a possibility. And at that time, after the evaluation, there could be a recommendation for a statutory change independent of what we're talking about here.
Okay. My concern is for agencies. Forget about the Penk case, whatever happens there. Agencies in the future, I think, need to know whether or not their legal costs are going to be covered if there's a colorable claim for which you accept responsibility for defense. Or we're going to have another agency that's going to be sued under another title that's not specifically spelled out, and they're going to have a hole in their budget when they get a bill from the Attorney General's office. And that's the policy issue that I think we've got to deal with to protect these agencies and to let you folks know how you're going to assess your premium so you can anticipate that cost if you're going to be responsible. That's what I'm trying to make sure we address and face the issue.
Yeah. I've passed the gavel to Representative Joe, and I have to go for just a few minutes. I'll be right back.
Are you finished?
Yeah, that's fine. I think Representative Bunn may have had a question.
Well, I want to follow up on that. I have a concern. If you take out Representative Springer's language and use as an alternative your rulemaking power, will you in fact be in a position after those rules are made where everybody knows the rules of the game, know what legal fees will be charged back to them, and be charged to you, and how is that agency then going to do planning? I'm assuming that we wouldn't have a Penk case then problem because everybody knows in advance whether that's covered or not covered. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, that's correct. The purpose of this bill is to allow us to have the ability to set policy and let agencies know right up front what they're responsible for.
Is there a reasonable possibility under your rules that you will say to an agency, type X is not covered, and they still could be exposed to $1 million in legal fees that are uninsured?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, it would be unlikely. We already, after the Penk case was filed, we purchased a commercial insurance policy, a catastrophe policy that includes Title VII in it. It doesn't apply to the Penk case, obviously, because it was purchased afterwards. But it is our intent that we would track that type of thing with our fund, so that the fund would then pick it up with this catastrophe protection, and that. Yes, the entire one of the main purposes of this bill is to enable us to tailor the coverages with what agencies need for their protection and charge a premium accordingly.
One further question in that regard. It seems to me that historically you don't know what their need is until they get sued, and for the first time we become aware that there is a problem there for that agency, and all of a sudden we've got $700,000 in legal fees. Is there any way to avoid that in areas of new law being developed, new case law?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, we are in very close touch with the Justice Department, and they keep us informed on issues that come up that the state is exposed to. As a matter of fact, with this class action in Pink, we were advised that this is a risk, and we then proceeded to purchase an insurance policy for that. So this consultation, plus we have two risk control analysts on our staff that regularly visit state agencies to do survey work, look at their programs, and are in tune with what's happening there, and we are able to pick up risks with those type of contacts.
Yes, Representative, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Dick. Dick, does what they've outlined take care of your problem without the amendment? How do you feel about it?
I guess I need to think on it a little bit more. Again, your first question in terms of making sure that I'm just speaking to the cost of defense, which follow the coverage, which would be provided. I don't know necessarily that the existing language solves that problem. Maybe this new language, it's implied that that's the case. I would like to make sure it's spelled out specifically that the responsibility for legal cost is going to follow one for one with the responsibility for defense, our coverage with the agency. I'm pleased. I think I understand that Mr. Snyder is saying that's in fact the case, but just as has been pointed out, it may be difficult if we have a rule which states specifically what the coverage will be, and then we have a cause of action that hasn't been anticipated. We're going to have another kind of Pink case again, where the department has accepted responsibility to defend, but then they pass through the cost because the statute or the rule doesn't specifically say the cost will pass through. And I guess the fact where you have a request for an attorney general's opinion now tells me there's some problem with interpreting the existing statute as to apparently a separation between the responsibility for coverage, although I'm not sure who's going to pay the bill if the state loses in that lawsuit. Maybe that's something, I don't know if we want to get into that now, but it apparently, as far as the legal costs, because of a problem with the existing statute, not anticipating perhaps this kind of action, we have the Department of Higher Education is stuck with a $2 million plus legal fee at this point. And I'm just trying to avoid that happening in the future, basically.
Representative Bunn, are you?
Yes, that's fine.
Thanks.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm having difficulty understanding this nebulous thing about rules and statute. Now, as I understand, rules don't have the force of law, of statute. Is that right? And yet, it seems to me I'm hearing you say that even without the amendment, this will all be taken care of in here because of thus and so. Could you help me understand where that is in the law or in this bill? Could you?
Madam Chair, yeah. Representative Peterson. The program that we have proposed, the risk management program, will provide coverages to state agencies, as I mentioned, that they require, and that it's like an insurance company that issues a policy, and it includes defense costs and all other costs related to that particular coverage that's being provided. That is the program that we would be following. And we have the current law that requires us to pay the Attorney General's fees in connection with the Tort Claims Act. And obviously, if the Tort Claims Act was amended or expanded or however, we would be required to track with that. There'd be no choice in that matter. But when there's actions brought, for example, that relate to agency programs, you know, stop doing something they're doing, or you know, you should be doing something you're not doing, those kinds of things then would be the type of thing, as long as it's a violation of 42-1983 allegation, then we're on the hook and we do pay the defense costs. The issue with the Pink case was it was a Title VII, and that under strict interpretation of the Tort Claims Act, so far we haven't been advised that is covered. But yes, with this bill, we would then have the ability to provide all coverages that agencies need, and be able to, we would intend to pay those costs all connected with it as part of that.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to go on record agreeing with what I'm hearing from both Representative Bunn and Representative Springer about there's still a big door open out there that we can't project ahead and know about, and that concerns me also. So I don't think I'm ready today to make any kind of decision on this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Any further questions?
I'd just be curious if Mr. Snyder's had a chance to review the Judicial Department's letter, or Mr. Nestle, or if there's any comment at this time on that by you folks or Department of Justice, or if you'd like to let us know later if the issues raised here also need to be addressed in the form of an amendment, or whether you see the same problem that they're experiencing it at all.
Madam Chair, I'll respond first, and perhaps Bill Nestle will have a question. Representative Springer. That letter focuses on the question of the ambiguity of the statute, the Tort Claims Act, not on our authority under 278, which tracks with that. So the ambiguity comes out of the Tort Claims Act and our required responsibility for that. And like I mentioned before, we cannot expand our coverages under existing law other than what's provided in the Tort Claims Act, and that's where the problem arises. With this bill, we will be able to insure the Title VIIs and the other things, and so we can broaden our coverage. We would hope that we could do it through the rulemaking, policymaking approach, rather than being, you know, through a specific statute.
I'm not sure if that's going to make the Judicial Department particularly satisfied. I guess what you're saying is there are some problems in reconciling the authority that you seek in this bill and the Tort Claim Act. Is that?
No. The problem that was raised in the judicial letter was a problem that was an interpretation of the Tort Claims Act and how it applied to those particular lawsuits. And we would merely track with that interpretation in terms of what our responsibilities are.
Madam Chairman,
yes. I'm not sure I followed that completely, but go ahead.
Well, I understand Dick's concern, if we pass this bill without his amendment, you would still have potential ambiguities in the Tort Claims Act. The only thing is, once an ambiguity was clarified that there was coverage, your rules would handle it. But whatever ambiguities there are would still cause problems for everyone. Am I understanding that correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Bunn, we would be able to provide the Title VII coverage with this bill, and we would then, of course, have to pay the defense costs if we provide the coverage.
Right, so, but to whatever degree in the Tort Claims Act there's confusion, that wouldn't be solved by this bill.
It would be solved by the fact that we can now provide a coverage that we couldn't before. So that it doesn't make any difference what is in the Tort Claims Act.
So that coverage would be broad enough that there wouldn't be those confusions.
Exactly.
Any further questions? Yes.
Okay, the way I understand it is simply you want to have the right to tailor each insurance policy to the needs of that department. And that department has the right and the obligation to read the what is provided for them, and to understand it. They have the right to insure for anything they want. Is this not true?
That's correct.
In other words, if they don't like that, what you present to them, they can demand a different policy at a different premium. Is this essentially it?
Madam Chair,
this is essentially the rule that you're setting up.
That's right. The state agencies have the right to request coverages, and we respond to that request either through a self-insurance program or combining insurance policies, or you know, whatever is the least cost alternative. So yes, the agencies can demand and request coverages, and then we provide those coverages that they request.
They can demand specific coverages and implied coverages.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Madam Chair, we can now, with this bill, we can provide it where we couldn't before with existing law.
Are you through, Representative McCarty? Yes. Any further questions? Please, yes.
I guess if I were an agency, and even if I were to read your bill, in it's, you know, as it's originally introduced, and I were to read that sentence 13 there, to provide all insurance coverages required by law, I guess I would go and look at the Tort Claim Act and think, well, okay, at least it's that, but there's nowhere I would know that I'd be covered or protected for Title VII unless we change the law.
Madam Chair.
Or you promulgate some rules which try to go beyond that responsibility provided by statute, and I'm just wondering if that's sufficient notice to agencies to know in the future if they're sued under some different theory or different statute, first of all, whether they've got coverage, and secondly, who's going to pay the cost of defense. And that's what I'm trying to anticipate and suggest. Maybe we need something in the law that states very clearly and specifically, whether it's here and some additional amendments under the Tort Claim Act, so these agencies know what's covered and what isn't. And you folks know, too, when you build your premium base.
Madam Chair, Representative Springer, I agree. And the existing language that we have, it's very tight. And we would propose to, if the coverage is not provided as the Tort Claims Act is now defined, if it's not required to be provided, then the agency could request from us coverage for Title VII, and we would be obligated to provide it. But we would provide the rules and the method under which we provide it to them, and to tailor the coverage with the price we charge. And we could do that under this agency request segment. Now, if the Tort Claims Act was broadened, then that would be another way of approaching and requiring us to do it through that. To that type of, and again, with the AG's opinion coming out, we really don't know what that will require.
Yeah, if I were an agency and I said, well, how am I going to be protected? And I read that to provide all insurance coverages required by law, where do you go? I guess the only place it goes is the Tort Claim Act, maybe. And then I'd be on the phone to you, I guess, saying, can you provide this coverage? And you're telling me, well, by rule, you probably would, or you would, in fact, absolutely have to provide that coverage?
Madam Chair.
Representative Spring. Musical chairs or something.
I wouldn't look that far over, I'm sorry. Representative Springer, I believe that request would be a mandatory request. I think that we would be required to provide that because we do specify that the agencies have the request to demand or the authority to request a coverage. They have the final spending authority on that, too.
Okay, well, I don't want to beat this one into the ground, but...
I don't mind. I just don't want to... This bill is pretty encompassing from a non-lawyer point of view, and I appreciate to have the legal opinions we have in this committee, so, you know, I want this thing to go out, and I don't want to see it back again.
You may be sorry you upset. Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I don't know what procedure is appropriate, but might it be worthwhile for Representative Vine and Representative Springer to sit down and work on this problem a little themselves, maybe with Mr. Snyder?
Are you confused?
No, I'm just hopeful.
Well, I'm confused. I'll admit it.
Yeah, it sounds like a major concern, and yet I don't think I'm ready to deal with it today.
No, we're not going to a work session on this. I can see.
Two people would be willing to come up with some sort of middle ground or...
Well, that's what we've been trying to do is work on it, and Representative Springer, in fact, has done a fantastic amount of work, and I'm appreciative. But... I agree with you, Dick. If there's any question on this liability of attorney fees, we just don't have a bill until we get it cleared. Representative Vaughn.
I think what might be helpful, you know, it's difficult to sit here and look at a bill with the changes and make a spot decision, but if the agency has an opportunity and the Attorney General's office has an opportunity, Representative Springer, each member of the committee have an opportunity to think about this for a while. Mm-hmm. I suspect that there will be a consensus developed that says, we think without the new language, the problem is solved and here are the reasons why. Some of those have been articulated this morning. Or, well, there is a problem because tort claims does leave ambiguities. And I don't know whether it does or not. I don't know how Title VII is even handled. Representative Springer mm-hmm. obviously does. I think we'll gain a consensus one way or the other then. I do feel that if we're going to keep language in sub 1, that we do need to tighten it. I just don't have a good enough handle on whether we need something.
Okay, I'm getting the feel that from what I've heard so far, there's enough substantial proposed amendments in this bill And we received the amendments, what, a day or two ago, and it...
After our hearing Monday, I asked Kathleen to work up some amendments, and she got them to us late yesterday afternoon. I distributed to some folks who I'd already talked about, that I was...
Yeah.
Gene and I had a conversation yesterday morning. We talked about these amendments, and we got them a hard copy yesterday.
We scheduled last week for Monday and Friday on a bill, and this happens. What I'm going to do, and I'll tell you what I think I want to do, and what I'm going to do, is I don't think we're going to get any further in this hearing today until some very legal questions are answered. And I want to give especially the three members whose occupation deals with law a little more time to work on this. So what I want to do, and I thank you for coming, I'm going to close the hearing on this, and I'm going to wait until I get some feedback from the rest of this committee as to their understanding of the bill before I have another hearing. Then we'll go into a hearing and possible work session. But I think we're going to spin our wheels on this until we have a little more time to work on the amendments. Now, unless you have...
Just let me flag three additional amendments, because this is only one of the three issues. The second one is pretty brief. It's based upon a specific exemption of the professional liability fund that is administered by the Oregon State Bar. That's right at the bottom of page one. And